What's happening on the ground in Portland right now as you get closer?
There's a lot going on in Portland, Chris. Since recreational became legal last Thursday, October, well, I guess it was not last Thursday, but October 1st, there's been explosive sales growth as the recreational market has come on, and our projections are that as a result of recreational, you know, the market's gone from 140 million or so to over 800 million in the state of Oregon. And, you know, we're seeing that kind of growth in our one dispensary, where our number of clients used to be around 100 a day, and now it's around 400 a day. So it's,
wow.
things are certainly changing. And, you know, we have been selling about over a million dollars a month in the last 6 months, because we've been capacity constrained. But we're adding machines between now and the end of the year to give us lots of capacity, so that we're, you know, going to be in a position to be able to satisfy that market demand. So it's exciting, and there's a lot going on.
So as I'm guessing, as demand outstrips supply right now, probably across the board in Oregon, do you increase prices to accommodate, or do you keep it as it is to generate more of a user base?
You keep it as it is. And, you know, we're just trying to adjust to the increased demand. Remember that recreationally, what happened was dried marijuana became legal for sale in medical dispensaries as of October 1st. Mm-hmm. Oils and edibles are still only available through the medicinal market. They're
okay.
Not available recreationally yet, but, you know, we hope that we're successful in educating, and as a result, that oils and edibles will become recreationally legal after the state legislature sits in the next session, which is in February.
I know in Colorado, they've had issues with trying to figure out how to regulate edibles and the like.
I think it's a situation of education. At the end of the day, better to, you know, not smoke your medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, though, there's learnings from the other states relative to how you go about oils and edibles around, you know, imagine a more pharmaceutical approach where dosage is carefully measured and, you know, youth access is strictly controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, child-proof packaging is an important element. Those are all lessons that have been learned in Colorado, and I think that our plan is to leap right to that state now.
So obviously there are a lot of other states sort of coming on board. I know that in Ohio right now they're having a vote to see whether they'll be the next state.
There's 23 states in some form of decriminalization right now, in four legal states completely, and Washington, D.C. It's on the ballot in nine more states in 2016.
So as things open up in other states, obviously, you know, you've got a first mover advantage in Oregon. How much of your time is going to be focused on just solidifying in Oregon as opposed to the potential for other states?
Yeah, I think we want to perfect. You know, we are by no means a mature business,
mm-hmm.
and we have immense opportunity in the state of Oregon. So, you know, we are trying to simultaneously perfect our business model in Oregon, while examining and looking closely at going into other states. And we have a memo of understanding with a partner in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
We're in due diligence at the moment. So, you know, it's a fine line between making sure things in home states are well executed and while at the same time not missing opportunities in other states.
For sure.
Part of the strength of what Golden Leaf has is that strong management team.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the bandwidth to, you know, consider other states.
Obviously, you're in a healthy financial position if an opportunity does present itself. How likely is it that you need to go to the market to raise money to pursue an opportunity as opposed to just financing it yourself?
I don't think we're going to the market until late first quarter, 16. I think that, you know, we would be able to find a way to do Washington. That's all forward-looking, but that's the state of play.
Right. I imagine if you do go to the market, though, it would only be for a growth situation. Would I be right there?
Yeah, very accretive acquisition.
So let's talk about the going public. There's obviously been a process that's taken some time, but I guess you want to make sure you do it the right way. When initially we talked, I think the plan was to go at maybe 50 cents, maybe a dollar. What's the opening target right now? The most recent financial, what was that at?
A dollar US, so $1.30 Canadian.
Right.
We raised a sizable amount of money at a dollar US.
So the delay actually did well in allowing you to raise your value before you actually go into the public space.
Yes. And frankly, you know, in June, we just got too close to the summer break, and there were some further things that we wanted to get right before becoming a public company. You only get one shot at it.
Sure. So obviously, you've got long-term shareholders have volunteered to hold their stock for a period of time. How much have you heard from people about whether or not they'll be actually buying rather than just holding?
I think there's quite a lot of interest. It is such a differentiated story. You know, it does offer investors from actually globally. I mean, we already have investors from Europe, the U.S., and Canada. It allows for participation in the U.S. market through a Canadian company. I think it's a very differentiated story. And, you know, we're not a marijuana growing business. We're a manufacturing business. We manufacture oils and edibles. That's our primary focus. And we think we don't know. We know that we're the largest extractor in Oregon. We, based on what we know, I think we have first mover advantage, and we're likely the largest extractor in North America.
Do you think in quick time the market will view you as almost a tech company or a health company rather than a weed company?
We certainly believe, you know, that's how we're positioning ourselves. Our vision is revolutionizing health and wellness, improving lives with cannabis.
The products look amazing, by the way. I was looking at your website last week, and they're the sort of thing you would expect to see on a shelf at 7-Eleven or, you know, in a health food store. The industry at large is generally proliferated by people who are, you know, wear their T-shirts with their cannabis leaf on it and, you know, have all the leaves that they can shove onto some street signage in a dispensary. But do you see the industry at large transitioning away from that we're all going to get stoned to grown-up businesses?
Absolutely. You know, what our approach is we think there's two key things to be successful. The first is the marriage of industry experts, people that have been in the industry for a while, with seasoned corporate gray hair adult supervision. That marriage is critical. And the other element is access to capital. And what we're really trying to do is bring the best of big business management and leadership to the cannabis industry.
And so far, so good.
It will be a big business and in short order.
Have you already had sniffs from other companies? You know, have your Tweeds or your Big Tobacco, have they sort of sniffed around the edges yet?
Not yet. I think it's, you know, there's clearly Big Tobacco, pharmaceutical, alcohol, and food companies will, I think, become interested in the space over time, mm-hmm. looking over the ledge.
Certainly, the hemp side of things has been sort of around the edges of the food industry and the health industry for a while, but without the big pickup, we've moved very fast in the last year and a half, 2 years, to the point where some people are saying that maybe federal legalization isn't as far away as some thought. What's your take on that?
58% of Americans believe cannabis should be legalized, and that's up from 30% in 2002. That's a big change. Mm-hmm. Tells me that the will of the people is going that way. 83% of Americans believe that doctors should be prescribing cannabis. The winds that we hear in pickup are that federal deregulation could come as early as 3 to 5 years from now. And I think there was a massive, big, big change made about 2 months ago when the Obama administration allowed medical research into the cannabis mm-hmm. space. You know, up until now, it's been illegal. And as a result, it's only anecdotal stories about how cannabis provides relief to so many ailments. But, you know, with medical relief and proof, I think change will come quickly as we start to realize the medicinal value of this wonderful plant. It's been around for 5,000 years.
Yeah, it's in the Bible there somewhere, isn't it? Yeah, your experience in Oregon, you know, things went from not too many years ago where it was as illegal as anywhere to Were you surprised how quickly things fell into place in the end?
I haven't been involved that long to have seen that, but recreational certainly came very quickly. And, you know, I think it's all very positive. I think, you know, the regulators and legislators in Oregon are trying to look at lessons that can be learned from the states that have preceded them and are trying to get it right the first time. And I think they're making great progress.
So obviously, the first time I talked to Golden Leaf, I think you'd just gone from making $350K a month to $400K a month. The next month was 700, and after that was 1.1, 1.2. That's a hockey stick that was only interrupted by your ability to source machinery. But the last time I spoke to you guys, you mentioned that you've got a good machinery supplier that's almost got an exclusive deal with you. You basically filled their pipe for the foreseeable. You know,
we're really trying to have a strategic partnership with our current provider, mm-hmm. to the point where, you know, through a combination of research and development, we're going to re-engineer the machines, mm-hmm. Build intellectual property into them, and then they become our machines and not available for sale to anybody else. That's we're trying to stay in the forefront of extraction technology.
Certainly. So it's almost like an acquisition without an acquisition.
Yes. Good for them. It's good for them, and it's good for us.
So at what point do you think you're going to not need any more machines? It seems like the demand is such that, and growing so quickly, that you're almost always going to be backfilling on that front. It's a good problem to have, obviously, but
we're trying, we're really trying to get into a position of overcapacity. That would be mm-hmm. terrific, but we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to keep adding machines until we've reached that point.
If a machine is operating at full speed and you're getting the most you can out of it, how long does it take for a machine to pay itself off?
2 months.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, we think so, yes.
I mean, as far as, you know, coming from the Canadian weed scene where everyone is so desperately trying to either get licensed or when they get licensed, figure out how to actually grow the stuff and how to sell the stuff when they can't market the stuff.
It's a very, very different market.
It's crazy.
You know, the volumes just speak. I mean, I think we talked in our last call about 25,000 patients in Canada with 25 licensed producers or so mm-hmm. chasing their business. And with recreational in Oregon, we have almost 500,000 consumers, 25 times the size.
It's crazy.
And then if we're successful in Washington, you know, Washington's twice as big as Oregon. That takes the total market to 2.5 billion with close to 1.4 million consumers.
And you guys are first movers on both sides.
Yeah. We don't, you know, nobody really knows. There's not a lot of industry research. Mm-hmm. That's the best take we get. I mean, this industry will be a big business.
And certainly there are a lot of people out there like myself who aren't yet customers, but when the technology lends itself to making use of the product in ways that are more reliable or easy to get your hands on, may well become. So the industry is almost immeasurable at this point.
I think so, yeah. You know, as medical research comes on stream, I think that consumer group, I mean, it's 11 to 13% of the population, mm-hmm. more or less, no matter where you are, but that's kind of what the percentages are. But I think that will change dramatically with medical research.
I mean, as soon as a doctor can and will prescribe it, there are a lot of people who probably never thought of it who'd become instant customers.
And I think it's, you know, really serves the cannabis companies well, but involved in helping to fund this research. And we're in discussions with Sunnybrook to help fund a look into the efficaciousness of cannabis on prostate cancer and breast cancer.
Massive markets just by themselves. Do you think that Canada's kind of dropped the ball a little bit? It seemed like it was first cab off the rank, and you know, by over regulating has kind of tied itself up in knots and lost its advantage over what it could have had over the US?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you can really hang it somewhat on the election. It is a bit of a lightning rod as an issue, and the current government has basically gone silent for some time on the subject. You know, I think it was unique that Canada jumped out medically legalizing it so early across the country. I think the other thing that was done well was ensuring compliance. You might suggest it's a bit over-compliant, but at least it's safe and is regulated, mm-hmm. which it should be. But I think everything is just on hold at the moment. And I think when the new government, whoever that may be, we'll see what happens.
So the the average medical marijuana investor has taken a bit of a beating over the last 6 months or so, at least up here. Do you think that there's likely to be any sort of jump for your stock, or is it going to be more of a wait and see? If it moves one way, we'll jump in. If it moves another way, we won't.
People are, you know, reacting very well to our story. It is a differentiated story. It's a manufacturing business versus a cannabis growing business. It has a very strong management team with a lot of food industry veterans with, you know, 25 plus years experience. The size of the market is attractive. I think there's a lot of money on the sidelines for cannabis because, you know, it is prohibition all over again. So I think there's money in the sidelines, and if there's a differentiated story, I think people will jump on board.
I think the fact that you've come to Canada for a listing probably speaks volumes. A lot of the time when you get a marijuana company or a marijuana-focused company, you know, on the OTC, the concern is what you're being told actually happening on the ground. But the Canadian compliance side, much more strict. That was some of the appeal coming up here for a listing, right?
Yes, for sure. And the investors here are familiar. It is federally legal. There are other public companies trading. So good place to start. We do plan, you know, once we start trading in Canada, to look at the New York market and co-list.
How quickly do you see that happening?
As fast as we can, 45 to 60 days.
Oh, nice and quick.
You know, we're looking at Frankfurt as well. Our plans are less developed in Europe, but we do have a substantial European investment base.
Okay. How long has the company actually been about? When did the first fundraising happen?
April 2014, May 2014.
Okay. So it's been a pretty quick trajectory.
Yes. Well, it's... It changes fast and it's growing quick.
Month to month, are you surprised by exactly how quickly the rubbers hit the road on this thing?
I think the growth from September 2014 at 150,000 a month to a million in April, 7 months later, was pretty spectacular.
That's almost viral.
It caught us a bit off guard, and hence, you know, as a result of some capital constraints and catching our breaths, we're now in the position to add capacity in a controlled and disciplined way. So, you know, bringing machine on one at a time. And so that's what we're doing. Between now and the end of the year, we're basically double the number of machines.
And then by the end of the following year, what do you expect to have machinery-wise?
A doubling again.
I know you have plans to work on a machine that has five times the capacity of the existing machines. What do you see as the timelines on that?
It's in development now. Delivery second quarter.
Oh, that's pretty quick, too.
60. And then, of course, we wouldn't need as many machines because, as you say, it's got five times the capacity.
So looking at it as an outside investor, you know, putting your I'm not a executive of a company hat on, do you see that this is an investment where one sticks their long-term money into it, or do you think it's going to go quickly enough that it's also a good day trade?
I think it can be both. I'd be keeping my money into the long haul because, you know, there's going to be massive consolidation after federal deregulation, if federal deregulation happens, but on the assumption that it will, you know, I think that is when you'll see the bigger players coming to town. And at that stage, our role could either be one of a consolidator or we could be consolidated. In a short-term play, you know, we'll have to see what happens after trading.
People look to the tech sector as being an area where one can, you know, if you get in at the right time and just before an exit, can be explosive growth-wise, but you're almost in that sort of framework there where you're almost only constrained by the physical abilities of the machines you have. Do you see yourself as a potential tech player? Do you see the IP that you're developing on the machine front as being important going forward as well?
We're trying to build IP into the business on the grow side where, you know, we have a company in Israel that we're importing. I mean, the Israelis are the global world leaders in everything having to do with cannabis. So we're trying to import best practice by having a company there, best practice in growing, cloning. And in the, you know, fullness of time, would we be able to develop our own strain, which is optimized for extraction, that would grow faster, be more disease resistant. You know, we want to be, when we grow, we want to be organic and not have pesticides. So IP in that whole area, IP in the extraction process where we're trying to get higher yields and faster cycle times. IP in the next stage of the process is refining. IP and refining? How do we more rapidly refine and clarify? And then, quite frankly, we're trying to develop IP in marketing, because this, our view is this will be a branded business, and that we're going to develop a portfolio of brands across both the medicinal and recreational market segments, and that there can be IP developed in terms of consumer insights, because there's not been a lot of consumer research into the whole cannabis space.
Certainly, if I'm a license holder in Nevada or Michigan, coming to you and doing a licensing deal to bring you into the state makes a lot more sense than trying to develop from scratch, right?
Yeah, we've gone through lots of learning in our short history, a lot of trial and error, and now we're trying to build good manufacturing practice and standard operating procedures around that trial and error and the lessons that we've learned over the last whatever it is now.
How much sleep do you actually get, or is there enough work to keep you busy around the clock?
No, round the clock. No doubt about it. We're creating history. It's exciting and dynamic and wonderfully challenging. And, I've got a fairly extensive resume, and I really wanted to plug in this such an exciting area. Prohibition's over, and we're building a brand new industry.
So more power to you. You've done well so far, and I look forward to seeing how it performs and hits the market.